At Best Western, we can't promise you the perfect family beach vacation. We can't promise that it won't rain, or that you won't get a sunburn, or that your family won't endearingly call you Lobster Mom for weeks afterward. What we can promise is a warm welcome and a comfortable room amidst all the joyful chaos. Lobster Mom. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western, with over 4,200 hotels worldwide.
Jimmy Jelinek and Dennis Quaid.
Are you looking for that special someone and their dog? A new dating app can match you with your perfect partner based on their dog breed. Well, have you ever dated somebody because of their dog?
No. And I don't think that would bother me too much. You know, I would do whatever it took, really, to make it seem like the dog, you know, I'd like put bacon in my pockets and stuff so the dog loved me. And then by proxy, the person loved me.
Really, that's the secret to being a dog whisperer, is having bacon in your pocket. Jack Nicholson in As Good As It Gets.
Yeah, I mean, you could hack the whole product here just by having bacon in your pocket, because they would think you were the most caring, loving dog person in the world.
Right. With such a great person, such a great guy.
Absolutely.
Because dogs love you. Who wouldn't, right?
Exactly. If a dog loves you, you're golden, so just put bacon in your pocket.
Right.
They call it the dog person's dating app. That's right. Finally, something for the dog obsessed. To connect with other dog folks somewhere other than the dog park, especially during these COVID times when face-to-face interactions are forbidden. It's called Dig, and they've got over 300,000 users on their app. You can select potential mates based on dog size and other predetermined filters. We recently caught up with Dig founder Lee D'Angelo to get the lowdown on this hot new dating app. Lee, so welcome to the Pet Show. Tell us why a dog dating app.
The lightning bolt was my sister, for sure. My sister is my co-founder, and she was dating a guy who, he tried to be a dog person for her. He really did. But by the end of the relationship, he wasn't letting Layla, the Cavapoo, which for dog people, you know, that's the closest thing to a teddy bear, right? It doesn't shed. It's about, you know, 20 pounds. And he wouldn't let Layla on the couch. She'd put towels down, and he was very nervous to have her in the apartment. And so she knew that being a dog person was so much a part of her life that there was no way they were going to end up being compatible.
And this was right around the time of the rise of the niche dating app, where everything from Farmers Only, which is for, I guess, farmers, to sites like Hater, which matched people by the stuff they collectively hated.
Whatever.
We're seeing massive spikes in usership across the board. D'Angelo sensed an opening based on the strong feelings that millennial pet owners had, not just for their pets, but how those pets would fit into the lives of their potential mates.
Mary?
Huh?
What kind of dog is Puffy?
Border Terrier.
Border Terrier. Like Benji.
Oh.
You know, dating app world is changing drastically, but it's a very young industry. So, you know, people have been using Tinder and Grindr for just about a decade, but people still are looking at ways of innovating. And so for us, we said, you know, one way we want to see dating apps do better is by really focusing in on the type of community you would want to date.
You can search by size. You can even be a person who is merely dog curious and wanting to date a person with a dog. But what you can't do is separate by breed.
We try not to encourage breedism, but we do let you search by dog size. But when we were deciding dog filters or different filters for the dating app, we really wanted to focus on what was best for compatibility for both the users and but also for the dogs. We know that not a lot of dogs get along. I have a German short hair pointer who chases small dogs around until they collapse. And so if I could pick my person, and I'm married, by the way, but if I could go at it again, pick my person, I would want to find someone probably without a small dog, just to make sure that that was easiest for that compatibility factor. So not necessarily breed, definitely dog size. But importantly, you can search for someone without a dog yet. Dog people doesn't necessarily mean you have a dog right now. And especially in certain areas of the country, Boston, for example, does not have a lot of dog friendly housing for single person households or apartments. And so we see a lot of people under 30 who don't have a dog, but they're looking to date someone with a dog, which is an awesome plus when you're dating and you love dogs, or looking to get a dog with someone in the future.
Digg is one of a slew of companies within the larger pet tech category that is remaking pet care based on a seismic shift in the industry as a whole. Mainly, the entire notion of what it means to be a pet owner is changing.
Well, it's all encompassing. You know, it's how you spend your time. It's how you keep your house. It's how you spend your money. When you're thinking about your dog, you're not just thinking about a pet. What I like to say is dogs have gone from the dog house to in your house to in your bed and now with you wherever you're going away from the house. And so when you think about it that way, you think about all the different ways that your dog is a part of your life. That's so important to find someone that matches that dog forwardness, if you will.
And you guys have already had some marriage matches, I understand, on Digg, right?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Actually, the first engaged couple was a 70-year-old and a 53-year-old.
And what kind of dogs did they have?
One of them had a dog, a rescue mix, and the other one did not. She thought you were supposed to have a dog, so she borrowed her friend's dogs for the photos, but then told him very quickly that it wasn't hers and still got along.
Now, there's almost an extra wrinkle with dog people because the people themselves could be compatible, but the dogs themselves might not be compatible. Has that become a barrier to some relationships because the couple's dogs couldn't get along?
Certainly, yeah. And one of the things that we said from the start is you want to know that up front, right? Like if you guys are going to get along and you start dating and then down the line you decide to introduce your dogs, then it's an issue. You know, that might be harder to wrap your head around or figure out the best way to go forward. You're going to be very, you know, protective. Whereas if your dog's a part of the process from the very beginning, it's one of you go on a dog friendly date as some of your first dates, you might be more open to trying to work through it or learning together how best to do that. That's why we really do lean on our trainers and our vet partners who give out great information on the best ways to introduce them and what to do if it looks like they aren't getting along.
We have a pet show exclusive for you today. Dennis recently spoke with actress Sharon Stone on The Denisseance about her upcoming role in the Ryan Murphy One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest prequel, Ratchet, to air on Netflix later this year. She plays Lenore Osgood, but it's her co-star that has everyone talking. Let's have a listen.
My regular person that I'm with all the time is this capuchin monkey that's on my shoulder, for real. And it was wonderful. I thought when Ryan said, I want you to have this monkey, I was like, come on, don't do that to me. I can't have to deal with this monkey on my head the whole time. And no, he's like, no. I'm like, give me like a leopard. Give me something else. No, it's a monkey. And like, really, a monkey on my back the whole time. And I got this monkey. I was like, I want to meet the monkey first. I want to get to know the monkey. I want to hang out with the monkey. I met this monkey and it was extraordinary. This monkey had been in Pirates of the Caribbean and really knew how to be an actor and was so present and so communicative. And talk about a lesson in going back to being present in your acting. Wow. It was incredible. I mean, I have scenes where it's just me and the monkey, like full dialogue and action and everything. And it was extraordinary. It was beautiful.
Wow. You had a real relationship.
Yes. And it restored me as an artist. And it's hilarious and wonderful.
I bet.
It was just great.
That's amazing. A monkey's purpose.
Ratchet drops September 18th on Netflix. Check out the rest of the interview with Sharon Stone only on The Denisance, which airs new episodes every Thursday. Now back to the show.
Next up, a fascinating look into the world of animatronic pets. A new company is taking on the business of dolphin shows and dolphin encounters by creating robot dolphins that swim, jump, carry humans, and communicate with crowds. Now, that's pretty amazing because I've been to many of these SeaWorld shows and dolphins on display, dolphins swim with the dolphins, did that with Jack when he was a youngster. I did Jaws 3D, and actually we shot that at SeaWorld in Florida. And I used to, I swam with the dolphins and also the beluga whales, which was really quite extraordinary. But dolphins, I have to agree that I always felt that these dolphins were encaged, basically. They belonged in the open ocean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these are amazingly brilliant animals. And this is going to stop them from being taken from the wild. It's going to really reinvent a lot of these places, like the SeaWorlds and places like that, where instead of having all of these captive marine animals, they're going to be able to be more about the education and the entertainment, but without having to take these animals from the wild. And these robot dolphins, and they're also going to be doing it with whales as well. I mean, they are incredible. You can't tell the difference.
Killer whales.
Yes.
Well, you can't tell the difference, except the crowd's going to know that it's a robot dolphin.
I guess so, but I think it's more for children's entertainment and children's education. Yes, you're right in the sense that they're going to know, but I think that's fine. You know, I'd rather have them know than have bunch of dolphins taken from the wild. And you know, these things can do the dolphin rides and stuff like that. They can jump 15-20 feet in the air, like the technology built into them. And then they have all this incredible sophisticated machine learning inside of them that they put the program in, and they start learning their dolphin life just based on following other live dolphins. It's a fascinating concept.
Wow. I was in Iceland when I was filming Enemy Mine. It was like during the 80s. And I remember offshore, there was a school of orcas, killer whales. And the two that were at SeaWorld, this was back in the 80s, that was I really, really felt for them. And they were really kind of cantankerous, you know, and so were the dolphins, actually. It was just, you know, sort of like really... You kind of felt from their personalities that they were uptight. That was, you know, a little bit like they were holding a grudge in a sense. You know, that they were prisoners basically.
Yeah.
And they say that dolphins are on a par with intelligence with humans. You know, language and emotions. And I think it's only recently, really, that we've finally come around to even admitting that animals have emotions, which has always seemed obvious to me, but it's a cruel thing, I think, to cage an animal like that.
Absolutely. And this is going to, you know, hopefully prevent that from going on in a mass level. I think they're, this company in China is going to be opening like 100 of these aquarium parks all across the country. And each one of them is going to be stocked with this variety of animatronic dolphins. And then they're going to expand.
Well, are they going to release the animatronic dolphins into the wild too?
Well, they want to. I was talking to the creator, and he was
really interesting to see how the real dolphins in the wild would respond.
Well, the dolphin knows that it's a machine because, you know, with their sonar, they can hear the machinery inside, but they still like to play. But what's fascinating to me is with the artificial intelligence inside the robot dolphin, if you release that robot dolphin into the wild, it could be trained by that live dolphin. And then the machine learning would take over. And then that turns into a whole thing.
Wow. Well, that gets into what, ever since computers came about artificial intelligence,
exactly,
and becoming its you know, Hal on in exactly. 2001.
That's what they call the singularity, when, you know, our minds yeah. and computers mesh. I mean, that's getting pretty close to it. At that point, we could be staring at our robot dolphin masters. But yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of implications for this stuff. It's fascinating.
Wow, pretty amazing.
In our dystopian future, after the last of every living creature has been hunted to extinction, our zoos and aquatic theme parks will most likely be filled with animatronic creatures that look indistinguishable from their real-life counterparts. Only this isn't the future, it's the present. And the goal, rather than replace what's been destroyed, is to conserve what still exists, as marine parks around the world face increasing pressure to abandon exhibitions featuring real whales and dolphins. Animatronic creatures can provide an appealing alternative to what's undoubtedly a cruel and unsustainable practice. In this scenario, the San Francisco-based special effects company Edge Innovations is making waves with its cutting-edge animatronic dolphin. The company, founded by visual effects veteran Walter Conti, who has worked on films like Anaconda, The Abyss, Jurassic World, and Star Trek, creating some of the coolest animatronic creatures in cinema, along with Disney theme park veteran Roger Holzberg, has melded cutting-edge animatronic technology and artificial intelligence with a conservation-driven push to replace captive dolphins and orcas in theme parks. These upgraded robotic dolphins aren't headed for a Disney theme park or resort, though. Instead, they're being developed and tested at a cost of $26 million per unit for a series of attractions at a new Chinese aquarium, where the government has put a stop to the wildlife trade as part of its efforts to slow and eventually stop the spread of COVID-19. We were fortunate enough to have the opportunity to speak with Roger Holzberg, one of the visionary creators of this so-called Dolphin Robotic Unit, or DRU. Let's listen as he tells us the origin of this improbable tale to free all the whales.
Edge Innovations has a 30-year history in the motion picture and theme park world. So going back to the first project they did was the humpback whales for Star Trek IV. If you remember that film, there was a female humpback and a calf. These were actually miniatures, which were adorable, about this big. And then they built the full-sized front end of the humpback whale that Leonard Nimoy swims down and has a communication experience with. Marine animatronics then became Edge Innovations' specialty. The dolphins for the Flipper movies, the orcas for the Free Willy movies, the anaconda for the Anaconda movie, the submarines and mini submarines for The Abyss, and even the front end of the Deep Sea Challenger, which James Cameron used to pilot down to the bottom of the Marianas Trench, are all pieces of marine engineering that Edge Innovation did.
Can you walk me through the making of a dolphin robotic unit?
The guts inside the dolphin start with a skeleton that very much reproduces in terms of size and movement and dexterity the major motion of an adolescent and Atlantic bottlenose dolphin. Onto that skeleton then go the actuators that move it in the range that the major muscle groups of that animal literally move its exterior functionality with. Then the next overlay is a series of fat bladders and organ bladders that mimic the weight distribution and density of the animal and its guts, right, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
And then finally, a skin goes over that, made out of medical grade silicone, and it is painted utilizing high definition photographs of a real animal. So it's painted to literally match the skin and the skin colorations of that animal. And finally, the final details of eyes and teeth go into the animal. Then the technology to make it move starts. So
right.
There essentially are three versions of this dolphin, two of which are complete and the third one is in development. Version 1.0, which we piloted 20 years ago with Disney, is a version that gets controlled by two joysticks with two animators, each having a box, doing different functionality. It looks a lot like an old-time video game. okay. that you would have seen in an arcade. The controls do.
Right.
Look like, okay. you know, video game arcade kind of joysticks. Version 2.0, which is the version that we utilized for the pilot with our Chinese client, has a degree of artificial intelligence now built into the Dolphin, where the Dolphin can swim at the surface, can do a shallow dive, can stay under for a bit, and then come back to the surface as it would if it were taking another breath, and then go back down. It can also begin a right turn or a left turn and complete that turn and rise back up to the surface realistically. That's essentially the artificial intelligence that that Dolphin can do. Once you then bring people and either an educational program or an entertainment program into it, controls then supersede the artificial intelligence, and an animator is then controlling the animal.
Okay.
And that's part two of it. Part of the reason why it moves and seems to be as extraordinarily real as it is because of the talent and experience of the animators who are controlling it.
So those are the first two scenarios. What's version three?
Then brings on another level of artificial intelligence, which will enable the robot to be in what we call exhibit mode. So meaning that if an aquarium is open for 10 hours and we are thinking that there is there's an alternating educational show and entertainment show in that venue at the top of every hour that lasts for 15 minutes, the animators are doing the educational or entertainment show because that dolphin is interacting in real time.
Right.
In real situations. But for the other 45 minutes, it's just swimming in that tank, behaving like a dolphin.
Okay.
So the artificial intelligence programming, you know, and goes up to a new level that gives that animal the ability to free swim and behave like another animal and have collision detection and all sorts of other smarts built into its AI.
And can you ride these dolphins like at those dolphin encounters that you go to in Cancun or Orlando?
So this version of the robot can do that, although it's not specifically designed to do
okay.
that. And that brings up a question that we get asked often, which I'm sure is on your list. Can it do everything that a real dolphin can do? Is that one you want to ask me?
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you what its top speed was, and then I was going to ask you what can it do?
Yeah, well, the top speed is, I don't know that we actually know, because we've never had it in a space big enough to actually run it up to its top speed without having to turn, right?
So you haven't tested one in like the open ocean and just sent it into a school of dolphins or anything like that, have you?
No. Well, so if you look at the Disney video, you will see that we did do a research experiment with real dolphins, but we did not put it in the same environment with the real dolphins. There were bars separating them.
Okay.
What we wanted to see in that just brief snapshot of research was if the real dolphins would interact with the dolphin and do mimicry with it. So real dolphins teach their young through mimicry. We okay. knew that the real dolphins would know that this was not a dolphin.
What about other non-dolphin species? Did they think it was real?
The other animals in the aquarium believed that the robot was a dolphin.
Okay.
Particularly the smaller animals, when it swam, would school underneath it and, you know, for protection, just like they do in the wild. But when we did the interaction with the live dolphins, they can echolocate through anything, basically. Right. I mean, a real dolphin has the ability to see through you, right? So they, through echolocation, could, which is essentially a high-powered sonar, can mm-hmm. see through the skin of this. They know it's metal, servos, right. robotics. It might have a shape that looks somewhat similar to them, but they know this isn't a dolphin. So what we wanted to see was if dolphins, particularly dolphins in captivity, get very bored, they yeah. like to play with stuff, right? We wanted to see if they would do mimicry with the robot and potentially begin to teach it things if the research were able to go on for a long period of time, like they do with their young.
Right.
So dolphins teach their young through mimicry. You'll see in the video, the dolphins would come over and they would open their mouth, and then the robot would open their mouth, and dolphins would go, okay, that's fun. They would open their mouth again. Simple mimicry, head shakes, you know, head right. shakes, right? Head swirls.
So how long does it take to build one of these units, like one with the sophisticated AI inside it that would interact with children?
For version 3.0 is about 18 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what happens? They get built in Northern California and then shipped to China or to New Zealand or to China? Like, I'm just curious
is a stopover in New Zealand. It's important to note also, we keep talking about dolphins, dolphins, dolphins. Dolphins is what we used for the pilot test and the video. Okay. I can't give you specifics, but dolphins are the smallest of creatures that are being worked on for the Chinese aquariums.
Oh, so that could be robotic whales and octopi and great whites.
The third thing that you just mentioned, how interesting might it be to have a small school of great whites in a large tank, because great whites have never been able to be kept in captivity before. They never will be able to be kept in captivity. Yet people, myself included, travel to crazy places in the world like South Africa to get in a cage and watch one swim by.
Have you guys been approached by the military at all? Like the opportunity to have submersibles that look like actual marine creatures? Like it could be the ultimate camouflage.
Wow. No. And I'll be honest, it's not one we ever thought about.
Oh, is my mind that dark that I immediately went to like, oh, this could be an amazing offensive weapon. Okay.
Well, it's no, because I don't know that if you know, I know only because I'm plugged enough into the world that I knew trainers who worked on it. There were live dolphins who were trained to do recon in Persian Gulf One. My real hope and dream is that we are able to create world ocean characters that younger people fall in love with. Because when we fall in love with something, when we grow up, we want to protect it. And my dream is that the characters we create cause our citizens of tomorrow to want to protect the world oceans and the creatures who live in it.
So conservation through intellectual property. That is, I think it's a very unique and innovative idea.
I guess so.
Have we really gone that far in destroying our planet that in order to save what's left, our only hope is to create future characters? IP, if you will, that through merchandise and story, we can prevent the extinction of species and the destruction of our planet? I shudder at the answer, but until we stop destroying ourselves, perhaps it's the only viable solution. Today in the Pet Show, we're going to check in with Captain Jake Anderson from Deadliest Catch. He's currently 30 miles offshore in the Bering Sea looking for crab with his crew aboard the Saga. And somehow we're able to chat via satellite with Captain Jake, who's going to fill us in on the marine life of the Bering Sea. Let's get to it. Captain Jake, what's out there at the moment?
Yes, we run into various different kinds of porpoises, whales, and killer whales, humpbacks. It is one of the most amazing things about fishing in Alaska. is the sea life, especially whales. I'll tell you a little story about killer whales and halibut fishermen. And this is halibut fishermen fish where we crab. So killer whales, as everybody knows, are really, really smart, right? Now, with halibut, there's like a buffet. You got these hooks coming up with this halibut and codfish, and they just sit there and they just eat the best part. They'll leave you with the head. And so the only way to get rid of these guys is they've tried a lot of things. My partner just bought this really, really expensive sonar sound thing, machine. Costs about $120,000, right? It made a bunch of noise, scared them off. Well, they're almost as smart as humans. Then after doing that for about 6 months, they started to learn that's the dinner bell. So that didn't work. That was a waste of 120 grand. They can hear you when you turn on your hydraulics, and they come running from 40 miles away. The only way to get rid of these killer whales out fishing, which it's so beautiful to see them, is you have to pass them off on another fisherman. So you have to drive them away as they're following you. And then you have to find someone else and you drive by them and then you leave.
Oh my God. Oh, then the fisherman must be like, fuck you.
Yeah. You get in big trouble, but yeah. And they are beautiful to see in the wild because they have their pods, you know. You don't just see one, you see like five or six. And in halibut season, you'll see pods over here, pods over there. And it is something truly amazing, especially when the herring runs come in when we're fishing Opies. As far as you can see, go out to the ocean where there's no land. As far as you can see, it looks like it's raining baseballs, but the sky is clear. As far as you can see, it's so abundant. You really get to see the depth, how much sea life there is in the Bering Sea.
Not that I'm ever going to pilot a crab or a halibut boat, but what is the maneuver for piloting a school of killer whales off of your boat onto an unsuspecting captain?
Well, it's really simple, right? So it's just as easy as it sounds. So you're motoring around, the killer whales, they'll know that you're not hauling gear because they're listening for the hydraulics to turn on, which is a high-pitched whine of like a 50 or 75 horsepower electric motor.
Right.
So they can hear a whine. So they'll follow you, you know, and a lot of times you'll go anchor up or you'll drift around for days, you know, hoping they'll leave. But if they don't, you just drive to the nearest longliner and hang out, and they'll hear them turn their hydraulics on, or they'll hear the hydraulics and boom, they're gone. And then you bolt back to where you came from, and you hurry up with all your gear before they figure it out, before the next pod comes and gets on you.
Thank you, Captain Jake. We're going to check in with the Saga periodically as he's out on the Bering Sea during crab season. This is fun for us and hopefully fun for you to see what he's seeing straight from the bridge. We'll talk to you later.
We're going to have a deep and frankly disturbing conversation with Zoltan Istvan, the leader of the transhumanist movement, which forwards the belief or theory that the human race can evolve beyond its current physical and mental limitations, especially by means of science and technology. In this conversation, he takes on transanimalism, where our pets will live forever via artificial intelligence, cloning, and other means.
Yeah, he's talking about everything else we're covering in this episode, but more from a philosophical level of your pets can now join you on this technological journey where we are one with intelligence and technology, which will allow you to live forever. If that means uploading your brain to the cloud or all these other things, he's also talking that you can do that with animals, and it will probably happen with animals first.
Probably will. We're talking about consciousness, basically, is what we're talking about. And I think we're going to be there before you know it, to tell you the truth. We're about being able to download or upload, if you will, our being and consciousness onto an artificial intelligent platform where it was. And I'm not sure if that's heaven or the middle place, what it is, but we could basically live forever until somebody deleted us, right?
Best Western, we can't promise you the perfect family beach vacation. We can't promise that it won't rain, or that you won't get a sunburn, or that your family won't endearingly call you Lobster Mom for weeks afterward. What we can promise is a warm welcome and a comfortable room amidst all the joyful chaos. Lobster Mom. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western, with over 4,200 hotels worldwide.